Okay, family meeting. It's time for the series finale of Movie Dudes. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
Did I say season finale? I meant series finale.
You did.
Well, we're not doing second takes here. You know, real quick, you know, this is our last episode, our series finale. We do talk TV a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite series finale of like any show like that you know you love?
I do not know. That's a good question.
I think for me, it's like I'm always kind of debating whether I loved the ending of Sopranos or The Shield more. But I think if you put a gun to my head, I'd say The Shield. Like that, the ending of that show was fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it's very good. It's kind of a miserable ending, but
oh, it's awful.
Also, the right ending.
So perfect, and just the way, some horrible things happen, but I think what happens to Vic Mackey is just kind of perfect, like poetic. Anyways, I won't force you to sit there and try to think of one if you don't have one.
Yeah, I know. Not one coming off the top of my head. And that's a good one, but so many TV shows end poorly.
Yeah,
they just kind of like either they go on too long or they're just flat, like they don't know how to end it.
It's a hard thing to do. I mean, it's much easier to start a great show, I think.
Oh,
I
yeah.
But yeah, it's for me, it's always been those two. But you know what? We are here not to discuss TV. We are here to discuss, for our final episode, I think a fitting conclusion to Movie Dudes is our top 10, you know, horror films of the decade. We've been doing the show for roughly a decade, and we've always kind of had a horror angle. Like, we review everything, I think horror has always been like, I mean, I said this last week, like horror is my favorite genre for sure. I think you and I just kind of like are both big horror fans. And so it's fitting.
I think like we've definitely spent a lot of time discussing horror films on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to hear your list. Funny note. Now I've had my list put together for over a month now and hasn't, I mean, there were some changes early on, but it hasn't changed since then. And, you know, some of them are very personal picks to me that I don't think a lot of people would pick. But a lot of them, like I'd say like my top five at least, I feel like are like super obvious picks that would be like on any generic list of the best horror films of the decade. And so it's really funny to me because I've listened to, I think, four podcasts, like, best horror films of the decade now.
Mm-hmm.
And all four of them did not include a single film on my list. I'm just like, I guess, like, as obvious as I think my picks are, like, I really think some of them are, like, super obvious, and I think there will be some crossover between you and me. Yeah, I've listened to a bunch of people now do their top tens, and these are people that really know horror, coming up with completely different stuff than me. So while I think I do think that we'll have like at least one or two that our lists share, I'm really interested to see what is on your list. And I guess that's kind of what happens when you have a decade worth of films. You're talking literally thousands of films.
Yeah, there's so many films to pick from, like.
So
it's a hard thing to do.
I mean, you'll see when we get to the top of my picks, like I really felt like some of these would be on any, like almost everyone, like we'll get into it. Let's just enough preamble.
Let's do it.
Let's do this. Series finales, boys. All right, Chris, what's your number 10 horror film.
My number 10 is Cabin in the Woods. I know this is one of yours. You're not a fan of kind of the mixed genre.
I think it's specifically this film, but I don't want to ruin what you want to say about it. I'll say something at the end.
All right. It's I like the writing. I like the premise of that there is this kind of like social science experiment going on. Demons exist, and kind of the way to keep them at bay is to kind of let them like feed every once in a while. And you do that by, you know, gathering in a group of kids, people. And it goes about like a normal horror film, except everything is being staged by people elsewhere. So,
including Richard Jenkins from my hometown.
Really?
Yeah. One of the two guys. He's in a bunch of stuff. He's in The Shape of Water. He's from, I mean, he doesn't live here still. He got out.
Right. Yeah.
But
obviously
he does come visit. Like he came, they at like this historic, we have an Egyptian theater here. He came to our screening of Shape of Water and met with people. I unfortunately didn't go, but anyways, not to derail.
I just find it to be a fun film. There's it's not necessarily a scary film. In any way, but I think it's really fun. It has a great pace to it, great vibe throughout the whole thing, and the ending is just fucking batshit. It's a horror lover's dream, like seeing all these mythological horror legends kind of like locked up, ready to go, or let out at the end there. where it's a crazy kind of thing that I find a lot of fun. I love going back to it over and over again. So
yeah, it's a movie that a lot of people love, and so it's one of those ones where I'm like, you know, what am I missing? And so, you know, after many years, I rewatched it last year, and I came away the same way, just going,
you don't get it.
Like I could get people liking it, but it's just like I've always had the problem where like I expected a horror film, and it is, I guess, but it's like so much else going on that like I could never get, like I can't get into the part near early on because I'm like, all right, I know this is all like they're staging this, and it's like it's not really just a cabin in the woods type. Like I just wanted a dumb slasher, and I
right. It's definitely something more than that. Yeah. There's a whole lot more going on. There's, I think that's what I find fun about it. Like it.
I know. Yeah.
What it brings you to, like the reason kind of like we probably went to it was, oh shit, it's gonna be this, like it's literally going back to basics. Like the name of the title is The Cabin in the Woods. Like it's going back to fucking Evil Dead, right? Like they're just, you know, six kids going to this cabin. They're having a good weekend and shit starts to go horribly wrong. And it's just the shit that starts to go horribly wrong here is all staged because it's all in service of these scientists that are in a bunker way below.
And it's like because of that, I like can't enjoy 90% of the movie, and then like the end when shit goes batshit, like that's like undeniably fun. Like, you know, like I can't sit here and go, oh, it's not cool seeing like all these, like they show like a bunch of like iconic shit, kind of, even though it's like they change it just enough so that they don't get sued. I think, Yeah, like I think I have fun at that part, but I just never been sold on it. But don't worry, Chris, I got at least one on my list that you absolutely fucking hate. So,
all right, I'm even with you shortly. Pretty sure I know which one that is.
Yeah, so. My number 10, Chris, is Frozen from 2010. So not the Disney film.
Different Frozen. It's with Jason in it.
Oh yeah, that's right. He is. He's like a ski lift operator. Yeah,
he's not in it long, but Kane Hodder is in it.
I don't know why I can't remember the director's name, and I don't have all the info pulled up. But director of Hatchet. I can't remember. Anyways, this is a movie that you turned me on to, and I think it might have been one of the very first films we reviewed on the show. And I've been a champion for it ever since. Like, there's a lot of people that knock this film. Basic premise is like three college kids get stuck on a ski lift after a resort closes, and fucking them trying to deal with that horrible situation. And there's a lot of people that are like, that's not how ski resorts operate. Like, fucking, that's not how wolves work. And I'm like, I don't know any of the shit, so it still fucking works for me. So I don't know what to tell you. I'm an idiot. Like, I'm not an expert on it.
Are we gonna pick apart everything? Like, it like so much harder. Like, if you start looking at it with an eye of, can this actually happen? That you lose all sense of reality. Like, there almost none of it works.
Yeah, it's just. Again, like, I'm from Illinois. I'm not a skier. Like, I don't know about wolves. Like, I'm not an expert on any of this shit. Like, I guess maybe if you are, like, I could see. Maybe you're like, that depiction's not right. Whatever. But for me, like, this thing kind of, like, checks all my boxes. I am afraid of heights. They're stuck in a chair, like, 50 feet in the air. I hate winter. you know, like, and just the stuff that they have to deal with as it goes on are, like, to me, very, like, you know, this is like a very, you know, maybe not believable for some people, but like, it's grounded in reality. It's not like a supernatural thing coming for them.
Yeah, no.
It's just a shitty situation they're in. And so it's kind of like easy for me to put myself in their shoes. And, you know, some of the scariest stuff in this is just like, little things. Like, there's a part where, like, kind of, I think our main character, the girl, like, she pees herself, and it's like, that's such a, like, a humiliating, degrading thing that, like, you know, it's awful. Like, and, you know, there's like a nuggets of truth and reality in that. And I don't know, I really, like, I've always dug this movie. I've probably seen it like a half dozen times over the years, and every time I watch it, I'm like, this movie's fucking solid. So
I don't know, it's like, regardless of whether they get the, you know, the details right, it is something that anybody that's ever gone skiing thinks about. This, like, because honestly, like, whether you would get stuck up there in the middle of the night and be left over, you know, a weekend or whatever, you know, whether that's true or not, the fact is that you can get stuck on these things. And hey, what happens if you were stuck on it and nobody knew? Like, these are things that go through your head when you're on these things. Yeah. And it's like, Adam Green was the director. It's like, yes, he kind of took all these thoughts of like, hey, what's terrifying about this simple situation? And how do we present it here? And hey, like, yes, maybe wolves don't work like that. But guess what's scary? A fucking pack of wolves. Right. like, being stuck like 50 feet in the air on this like rickety ass like chair. Like, all the things about it are terrifying. So it actually does work really well, whether it's true to life or not.
Yeah, and this is one of those ones on my list that like I don't expect to see on a lot of people's lists, but for me, it's my favorite Adam Green film, like, easily. Like, I like Hatchet, but he's kind of stuck with that series kind of since then, it seems like. And I don't really
like it. And they've gotten progressively worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I've not seen Victor. I don't know if I even saw Victor Crowley. If I did, I forgot it.
It's forgettable.
Yeah. I mean, even Hatchet 2 and 3 were not very good. But, yep. I mean, he's got something there. And I think this was his best thing so far. Hopefully he does more stuff in the years to come. Let's move along. What's your number 9?
My number 9 was a film pretty high on my top 10 of 2019 list. Midsummer.
Yeah.
It's a film. I mean, we've talked about it a ton. We reviewed it here on the show. But the fact that it is a horror film that goes against type, like most horror films are dark. They take place in nighttime environments, and the scares come from the shadows. Midsommar takes place in what's it, Finland? I think it's like Finland, like up in the
one of those countries. Yeah.
And during the summer, and you know, during the summer there for them, it is daylight for like a good portion of the time, like probably 20-21 hours or so. So most of this film takes place in the daylight, and it is amazing how he's able to kind of paint this terrifying picture of these. I don't really want to call them a cult, but I guess that's kind of what they are. These cultists that have bring in, they have emissaries go out and bring people back to basically sacrifice them to their gods or absorb them into their community. So it's kind of nightmarish. And through all that, you have this relationship drama between this boyfriend and girlfriend who are, they're like barely hanging on. They're like,
yeah.
The boyfriend, it very much seems like he's hanging on because his girlfriend was going through a rough patch. Like her family had just been involved in a murder suicide. And like, how heartless are you that you dump your girlfriend when that happens? So,
yeah, but it's like, because they're going through the motions, he's not what she needs at that moment. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, yeah. It's like they're caught in this thing that they can't escape out of. Like I love about Ari Aster is like his films are like really grounded in like relationships, like it's real life shit. And then like you add the horror, right? Like, and yeah, I love Midsommar, dude. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but like, it's not in my top 10 spoilers, but it easily could have been, and it would be in my top 15 probably. It's fucking great. And for me, like, you know, we've talked about it a bunch, like you said, but like, I'll just throw real quick out, like, what I love about it is the film is gorgeous. Florence Pugh's gorgeous. Every frame of this, like, just looks fucking like a painting.
Yeah, I love that they kind of went with a almost like a washed out kind of exposure to the film. Everything is like super bright, but almost to the point of like being watercolory,
and also almost like the sun is in your eyes too. Yep. A lot of, and you get the cool like psychedelic visuals once they take the tea, you know.
Yeah.
They eat shrooms at the beginning, and then later on they get dosed again when they're doing the ritual. I love Midsommar. I fucking bought it as soon as it came out.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. For me, it was way more approachable than a film I expect to see on this list. So on your list, it won't be on mine, but
we'll see. We'll see. I like them both, but for me, well, I guess spoilers. I like Midsommar more, and it's not on my list. So you might be able to figure that one out.
All right.
My number 9, this should come as no surprise to anybody. It's my favorite horror franchise. The original 1978 Halloween is my favorite horror film. So it should come as no surprise that David Gordon Green's 2018 version of Halloween, or kind of like sequel to the original Halloween, just called Halloween, is on this list. What the fuck can I say? Like they revived the series in a way that feels pretty smart. I don't know what else you would do. Like it's one of those awesome like legacy sequels where it's just like we're going back to what made these movies work, or in this case, what made the original work, and we're ignoring everything else. And I don't know. It's just awesome to see I don't think there's been an actual quality Halloween film like commend to people that don't love horror. since until this one. Like, I really I think I like Halloween 2 and 3 more than this new one, but like this new one's like a real fucking movie. And it's just great seeing them like kind of really deal with the character of Laurie Strode and the trauma that she lived through and how that would affect her life and her family's life for the years to come. So I still can't believe they did it, dude.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. Spoilers. it's also on my list, but, yeah, it's just coming off of those two Rob Zombie movies,
especially that.
I thought at that point, just kill it, like stop,
right? and I thought like this thing had no chance too when they announced the writer. I mean,
right.
David Gordon Green's an okay director, but like it just didn't make sense. None of it. I was like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, man, they hit it out of the park with it. So
yeah, I guess you know we will be talking about it more, but. Just it's just funny. I just want to note there's people that really love the zombie ones, and it's weird because like the people that enjoy them tend to really like Halloween 2, which you and I both agree is way worse than his first one. It's weird.
Oh, yeah. No. I can appreciate maybe the first 15 minutes of Zombies Halloween 2, which is really just a sped up dream sequence of the original Halloween 2.
Yeah.
But everything after that, like when they start exploring Michael and
it's just like not right for the character or the series. Like it's just so funny. Like the people that would say this will say, well, his first one is like he just kind of remade John Carpenter's Halloween for the second half, and at least in his sequel, it feels very much like it's a Rob Zombie film.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think I've come to the conclusion.
It's
that
just not, to me, it's for, just not
for
right
me.
Fit.
Maybe I just don't like Rob Zombie's movies.
I won't go that far. But I think he's a bad fit for the franchise. All right. What's your number eight?
My number eight is also from 2019. Jordan Peele's Us.
Damn.
I love the world that he has created there. The idea of an entire society of doppelgangers that are basically our kind of sadistic, twisted shadows living underground, and that everybody has one. Everybody has a duplicate of them. And just the presentation of it is kind of done very, it's for most of it, it's very much a slasher movie. It's just, you know, it's a bunch of these creatures chasing after the family until you finally get to the twist, which I mean, I think it's been out long enough now. We could talk spoilers on it.
Yeah. When we do these lists, we do spoilers anyways. So it's fine.
And, the fact that the reason that these doppelgangers are rising up is because of the mother of the family. She was a doppelganger and she switched places with hers at a fair when they were children. And so that she was a human, like she was a normal person living with these doppelgangers and she taught them to rise up. And they waited, took them a long time, but they were able to, and they came back and caused havoc. And I love that it just leaves at the end of that film, it just leaves this, like, the world is in a shit state. And
the hands across America.
Yeah. And with that, like, you're also left with, fuck, like, who is the mom now? Like, and it leaves you thinking. I think there's a lot of nice subtext to it. We had some really cool talks when this ended, you know, about class warfare and being left behind. And it's so fascinating to me how Jordan Peele has been able to kind of like find his way into into this genre and find a voice that has a relevant topics to horror.
Yeah. Well, to
society, but he's doing it through horror.
We talked about this a little bit on our end of the year stuff where, you know, Get Out gets a lot of credit for talking about race relations in a way that's like really in your face. But like this movie has like, it's not as in your face with the politics, but it's a film about how your relative comfort in life comes at the expense of someone else.
Right.
You know, what the things you have, you know, is taking away from somebody else. Like the film just like it's more subtle about it than Get Out. Get Out is very much in your face about like race relations in America. And here it's just like, you could probably watch Us and not think about what it's trying to say, but it's a lot more fun if you do think about what it's trying to say. My thing with Jordan Peele, I love Get Out and I enjoy Us. But I don't love him as a horror filmmaker yet. And it's for the most petty of reasons. It's because I want him to up the violence. Like the violence in his movies is always like hitting someone with a poker or stabbing them with a deer antler. It's like,
you just want to see the blood splatter. I want to see someone's fucking guts falling out.
I want to see someone's head explode from a shotgun blast. And like, if he gave me the gore, like I would be like this guy's biggest fan on earth. As it is, I'm just like, there's so much I love and respect about what he's doing. And I love that his horror films are like political and they almost feel like Twilight Zone episodes. But yeah, I just want him to up his game on that front.
Which also makes a ton of sense as he's, you know, he did that Twilight Zone series for CBS. So,
but you know, I get it now. I don't know if this is a spoilery type question to ask, but do you have a preference between Us and Get Out?
They're pretty equal.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, speaking of like upping the intensity and the violence, my number eight is a film that I think is one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen. That's The Snowtown Murders from 2011. Which I think you've seen too, right? I
have. It's the Australian one.
Yes, and it's based on a true story. So you can look up the Snowtown Murders and you might see the Wikipedia entry for the actual thing. But it's essentially about this, like, hey, your mom has a new boyfriend and your mom's new boyfriend wants to teach you how to be a serial killer. And the place is this like, it takes a little while to get going because it kind of, you know, it kind of acts like a drama at first. But like once this guy like kind of takes off his mask and reveals like just how truly evil he is, boy, oh boy, this thing chilled me to my core. Like just when he starts making the son do things like helping him murder people, like the murders themselves are incredibly disturbing, where it's just like there's one part that sticks out to me is like they have some guy in the bathtub in the movie with like a chain around his neck and they keep kind of like choking the guy out and bringing him to the brink of death, which is like something that Dahmer used to do. Like he used to like bring his victims right to the edge of death and then resuscitate them so he could keep kind of living the fantasy of like killing somebody. Yeah, like everything about this movie just creeps me the fuck out. And the villain performance of this, I think, is one of the best of the decade too. I can't remember the actor's name, but he's fucking great in it, and he's just totally chilling. I can't remember how you felt about this movie at all. Is it one that like you think is good or?
Yeah, I think I didn't come away as high on it as you did, but it is.
I don't know if I could say I'm high on it. It's just like I couldn't not put it on the list because I'm like, oh god, that movie stuck with me. You know?
Yeah, it's a disturbing film, for sure. And the fact that it is a, you know, true story is probably what makes it even more disturbing. Is that? This shit happened. Like a lot of the films we're talking about take place in like some sort of fantasy land.
Like, I'd say and everything else on mine like is not even close to based in reality like this one is. So,
right, and it's just like this is so reality based that I think that's where the disturbingness comes from.
It was on Netflix for the longest time. I don't know if it still is, but give it a shot. If you think you have the stomach, I recommend it. But again, it's one I definitely understand if people have, like, if it gives them the willies and stuff, because it kind of does the same for me.
Have to back off from it.
Yeah. All right. What's your number 7, Chris?
Well, you know, you asked right at the end of me talking about us, where Get Out falls, and like, Get Out
was a spoilery question. 7.
Yeah, like I like them pretty much equally. As you said, when we were talking about us, Get Out is so blunt and overt with its messaging that I think like it's something that needed to kind of be said, and it's something I really enjoyed about it. Like, was that it was so overt in what it was trying to tell. There's the one scene that I think kind of like I can knock it a little bit for, and it's the police office scene where they're interviewing his buddy, who's kind of like, "Hey,
you gotta go help my friend." Out a little bit, yeah.
It's just like this doesn't fit. Like this feels like it's from like a Key and Peele skit.
It's funny. Like it's definitely funny.
It's hysterical. It's just like, yeah, you know, where everything else in this film has been so serious and dire, and then like at the time this is all happening, like you're finding out that they're not just these like white people are bidding on captured black people to take over their bodies. Like, it's fucked up. Like, and just the concept of it is so fucking creepy and terrifying. But then the messaging behind it is so real and relevant to today that it really works.
The fun, a couple things. Like, it's interesting because like it's not just like about race relations in general. It's very specifically about liberals who think they're cool. Like
yeah,
we're not the racist ones, the Republicans are, but it's like it's a movie that specifically attacks those people. And I think another, like, I think this is not just one of the best horror films of the decade, I think it's one of the best films of the decade. Like, I think it like marks this decade as something that's gonna endure beyond this last decade. And it really felt like this dividing line in the decade between the good times and the bad times.
Yeah.
I'd say this decade went pretty dark for its second half.
Yeah, very much so.
Get Out came right at that turning point. So that's, yeah. I mean, again, it's not on my list, and I didn't make my other list either. I wasn't allowed on my other list, but like I wanted it to win Best Picture, and they should have went with it that year. It deserved it. But anyways,
especially since we've reverted to a standard operating procedure for the Academy. Yeah. So it would have been nice for it to have won.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: is the Academy never gets it right, and they're always fucking up. So I just assume that this year my pick, Once Upon a Time, is just not going to win fucking shit because they never get it right. Anyways.
What do you got?
My number 7 is your favorite movie, Better Watch Out, from 2017. I love this movie. I watched it like 2 or 3 times when it first came out. I haven't watched it since, but I have no doubt that I would still love it. And let me try to explain why I love it to someone who hates it. Well, one, the big thing is I think Levi Miller, the kid in this, who's the villain, I think it's just a really great villain performance. Like, it's just, he's like this little sociopath who's like 13 years old. So it's like, it's weird because on one side of the coin, he's like the most evil, fucked up person you've ever met. On the other side, he's still like a little kid whose voice cracks and who could get excited about stupid shit. And so it's just really, I think, a really like strong villain character. Like, I think it's a really neat idea to have this kid who's a total sociopath, but because he's still a little kid, like, they don't lose that part of him in the writing. I just also think that the film is constructed in a way that just feels like airtight, and it felt like he, you know, like Chris Pecker was the director, like he really went over and really tightened up the script and thought about the structure of the film. I love how like it goes in and you're kind of expecting it to be like this like home invasion movie, and it like turns on a dime, and all of a sudden it's just like, no, this fucking kid is evil and he's just gonna
so
evil shit.
So it's funny. You saying that, and I remember that being one of my biggest criticisms of this, like why I didn't connect with it. It's similar to you with Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. Where
it's, you know, I go in expecting this kind of like fun home invasion Christmas story. Like reverse Home Alone almost, right? Like that's what you're expecting.
There's elements of Home Alone.
Yeah. And instead it's this like this fucking sociopathic asshole that I could not stand. It's like, and you're not supposed to like him, I don't think. Like, but they paint him like early on, like he's just this kid, and it's like, all right. And then it takes such a dark turn. It's like, and this is so like, I don't know. I think
the film is a very dark film, but it also has like this kind of fun smirking vibe, which I think that might be what rubs people that don't like it. Like, where it's just like,
it's so nasty. Because it's the Home Alone-ish, right? Like with, you know, the paint can coming down and hitting the dude in the head and like shit like this that should be fun and enjoyable instead is being played for, you know, the straight up viciousness. And it's like, yeah, I think that could be some of it where people just don't connect with that aspect of it.
To me, it's like, it's a nasty hardcore horror film, but like, I like that smirking kind of like wink, wink that it's doing, because I feel like that part of it, like it's not trying to affect the tone of the movie. It's kind of just trying to look to you going like, don't you like how we surprised you here? Like, it's just kind of like, and it worked for me. And like, another thing, getting back to like what I really like about the structure and everything of it is like, it just feels so airtight. Like the way everything plays out. And at the end, he's kind of cleaning up after himself, like fucking Ferris Bueller at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And it feels very intentional, down to the point where it's like, he's just getting into bed as the parents are coming in. I love that reference. And then it's like, you're like, oh man, he planned this whole thing out. He fucking pulled it off, and this little shit's gonna get away with it. And then the very end of the film is him looking out the window, and the girl survived, and she gives him the fucking finger. And I'm just like, it was just like, to me, the perfect capper to that movie. And so like, I don't know, I've always loved it. I get it. Like people that don't like it, although you're one of the few people I know that like did really like had a like an adverse reaction to it, but. It always stuck with me, and it's one I'll probably watch it this Halloween or Christmas, but yeah, I haven't watched it since, you know, 2017.
It's very much a Christmas movie.
It does have that, and it has like the kind of Christmas vibe to it, and like even the font at the beginning looks like the font from Black Christmas and stuff, like the title cards and stuff.
All right. One thing I will say about it, I do think that image of the girl wrapped in duct tape and Christmas lights is a fucking, it's a perfect horror shot.
I'd say give it another shot one day, but again, I can't guarantee you'll walk away loving it. But I've always loved it from the beginning. That's why I remember when I really sold you on it, and you went and watched it. Like, I fucking hated it. I was like, what?
Like, no.
Fucking hate this movie? I can't believe it. All right. What is your number six, Chris?
My number six is a big budget film from 2017. It came in the year of Stephen King. That was a year of just excellent adaptations for his works. And it was top notch. I thought they cast the kids perfectly. Pennywise was cast perfectly. It has some terrifying moments in it. It's a ton of fun throughout because it kind of has this, kids in the summer feel to it. Even more so than like something like Stranger Things that
which came first?
What do you mean? With the
Stranger Things or It? Like the movie adaptation of It or Stranger Things?
Stranger Things came first because the kid from Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard, is in this, and he had already been it. Like we had already known him from season one of Stranger Things.
They probably were in production around the same time, though, right? Or no? Oh,
yeah. Stranger Things came out. The first season was 2016, so yeah, probably.
Maybe yeah. It's just funny to me how.
It kind of has the same vibe.
Yeah. I mean, which, again, that was in that was even in the 90s miniseries and everything, like the kids on bikes thing, like.
Yeah.
But
I think that the whole story of it is fun. It's fine. I think It Chapter 2 is an okay film. But as a standalone, like this first one, I think is near perfect. Those kids are great. Sophia Lillis as Beverly was fantastic. Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise, also like super terrifying and creepy. The imagery is great. It's kind of just the perfect portion of that story. And they did right by splitting it. I just think that where you get attached in the film is to these kids. And that kind of spoils it for two because they come back and they're adults. And it's like, they're not as much fun.
I enjoy both movies. I like Chapter 1 and 2, but my stance on this is like, look at The Outsider, that TV show that's airing on HBO right now. Imagine them doing it like that. Like, I don't know.
Should have been like a miniseries, sure.
Yeah. Like, just the breathing room and the quality. Production quality, but, HBO takes it to another level where, like, The Outsider feels like an adult drama, even though it's dealing with this thing that somehow, seems like it couldn't happen.
I do think that's part of the problem with the second chapter of it, because it feels like they're trying to rush so much in that. I didn't feel that there was a rush in chapter one, though, in that first film. It feels kind of perfectly paced, and it ends on the right note. Like they've beaten Pennywise,
and then you get to see them do it all again and again.
And when you come back to it, though, the adults have all these lingering issues from their battle with Pennywise as kids, and you don't get time to explore that. And I think that's where a miniseries would have helped this a ton.
I think a miniseries, again, my thoughts on it, but I do think that It Chapter 2 will be a movie that, kind of years from now, people will come back around on and go, you know what, it wasn't bad.
I don't think it's bad.
But your choice is specifically just It.
Just chapter one. Yep.
All right. My number six is I Saw the Devil from 2010, which is another movie you turned me on to. And
100%. Just missed my list.
Yeah. Well, I got you covered here. A cop takes 2 weeks vacation to go after this fucking serial killer. And what results is this crazy, like 2.5 hour, like kind of epic cat and mouse like chase. Like it's kind of like a Roadrunner cartoon was made by Satan. You have I Saw the Devil. It's just like, and another. I think I have a thing for strong villain performances, because another one from the bad guy in this, like he's just super menacing and like kind of, you know, he's got that Joker chaos to him where he's like, I don't give a fuck what happens. And this movie is just like, this is a Korean film. Looks great. It like has like, you know, it has some really strong horror elements, but then also like really strong kind of like action and kind of like fighting elements in it too. Like where they're just getting the fights and shit sometimes and just beat the shit out of each other. It's brutal. It's got an awesome fucking ending. It's been a while since I've seen it. I scheduled it for Halloween last year and I slotted in something else at the last second. But I'm due for a rewatch on this. But when it came out, you know, back in 2010, and this is another early one that we reviewed, I was like watching this movie over and over and like forcing it upon anyone I knew who like remotely enjoyed horror. So
I weirdly don't have any on my list, but you know, horror films coming out of Korea and Japan and Thailand
and France.
France is like a weird thing where it's like horror. Also, I don't have anything from France on my list, but Asian horror in particular over the last 10 years has been fantastic. I do think some of the new extreme French horror has turned, it's toned down. That was a lot like at the tail end of the decade before 2005 through there.
There's been stuff raw, like some, Raw didn't work for me, but
I liked Raw.
But just quick shout out to the international horror because I think Korea, Japan, Australia, and France, like fucking, they're keeping us on our toes and making us step up our game because a lot of it is better than what you get here. And a lot of it is like, I'm surprised we haven't gotten more like remakes. Like I actually watched Parasite last night and I'm like, this thing is getting remade for America in no time. Could have easily took place in LA or Chicago. You know what I mean? Like
it mostly deals with a family. So like you can plop English actors in there. You just need to get the right ones. Cause I think what makes Parasite work so well is the performances they get from the family. So
I think that the themes though in Parasite are like so weird. Like again, it's like you could easily have like in LA there's someone that lives up in the hills or whatever and like they're rich and the people like not to like sidetrack the Parasite, but I guess it's just like its messaging was like super on the nose and stuff, but I like really enjoyed that too, where it was like the people who are poor live at a lower elevation and they're the ones getting flooded when it rains. And meanwhile, the rich people are like, oh, it was so nice that it rained and it's sunny out today. Yeah. Like afterwards.
They have a nice yard. And
yeah. This is really cool.
They're not living in toilet water.
And that's one. Would you classify it as horror?
I don't know. Like it's a thriller. And I mean, I guess you can classify some thrillers as horror, but
I've heard it called everything. I've heard it called drama. I've heard it called horror.
I mean, you pretty much call it whatever you want because it crosses so many different boundaries.
I mean, I think that there's very strong horror elements, but I took it mostly as a dark comedy. Like it's very much just poking fun at it.
It's very funny.
Yeah. Kind of like a satire, you know, but with a real edge to it.
Yeah.
It's going especially. Chris, let's take a quick intermission. Let's go out to the lobby and get ourselves popcorn and soda and come back with our top five of the decade.
All right.
Now we're getting down to it. Our top five horror films of the decade and the final moments of Movie Dudes. What's your number five?
My number five is 2016 slasher film Hush. It's a slasher film where the victim, the main character, is deaf, and a lot of the film plays with that sensory deprivation, and it plays with your expectations and understanding of kind of how a slasher film works, because so much of horror films in general play off of sound cues. And Hush plays a lot of it very dull or silent in some ways. I mean, there's certainly sound, there are sound effects, there's a score to it, but they play with that, the fact that she can't hear, in a way that makes it super fascinating, and it's a thrill ride from start to finish. So
it is, and now I have not seen Oculus, but it's my favorite Michael Flanagan film. And it's also, like, besides the little twist he's putting on it with, you know, she's deaf, like, it's also, like blood simple, like, dead simple.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a guy, he's coming into your house, like, home invasion type thing, and it's just, like, him.
Just a straight slasher film, like.
But I mean, if there's one thing that sticks with me from Hush, it's the one murder he does where he stabs the girl, like, I don't know how many times, like 20 times. Like,
yeah, it's pretty brutal.
And there's kind of like a sexual element to it, kind of, but like, I just mostly thought, like, wow, like, I've never seen a movie make a just like a stabbing into someone's torso be so effective and horrifying. Like, it really, like, it's kind of like the scene from Snowtown where, like, it's stuck with me ever since. That scene from Hush, like, anytime you see that movie, and the first thing I'm thinking about is the guy stabbing the girl, like, overkilling yeah. them, you know, and the person being alive through most of it. Well, anyways, going into my number five, speaking of ultra disturbing violence, and number five is S. Craig Zahler's Bone Tomahawk from 2015. I watched this one again recently, and I think it's my favorite Zahler film. I really like Brawl and Cell Block 99 as well, but Bone Tomahawk is like this really kind of beautiful Western for 90% of it, with it kind of... Zahler's like he's like a wordsmith. He's really smart, and so that makes him perfect to write like this kind of flowery, poetic Western dialogue. And so much of the film is just you're hanging out with these guys on this mission to go save Patrick Wilson's wife. And this one, you know, has Richard Jenkins in it too. He's one of the guys. It's just kind of them on the trail, kind of talking with each other, and there's lots of like nice quiet moments. You know, them, like, there's yeah. a scene where like Richard, like, they're like going to sleep. They like built a fire and they're going to sleep, and you know, just Richard Jenkins talking about, you know, how he likes to read in the bathtub, but he always gets his book all wet. And they're like, "Oh, I got a solution for that. Get a little music stand, and you can put your book on it and just turn the pages off of that." And it's like, again, like, I'm just pointing out like something that's so little, but it's like that's like what's cool about Bone Tomahawk, I think. And then, I mean, you've seen this film, right? I think we reviewed this. That, like, when it goes apeshit.
Yeah, the ending of that yeah. movie is fucking absurd.
And it contains, like, a, you know, 2-second shot that's, like, some of, like, the most jarring graphic violence you're ever going to see. Someone getting, like, split end to end. And, like, you know, just their insides falling out onto the floor as their friends watch, like, in cages, horrified, and know that they're next. It's weird. Like, again, it's like this like kind of beautiful Western, and then like it takes a turn into the most extreme kind of horror at the end. So I really dig it. And you know, got Kurt Russell, like, it's a, like this awesome cast. So that's my number five there, Chris.
Nice.
I don't remember. Did you enjoy that movie? I know you're not like Western person, so maybe like it didn't, you didn't love it as much. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't connect with me as much. I'm not a fan of Westerns, so like that 90% of the beauty of the Western, it didn't gel for me. But that ending is pretty fucking horrific.
It's like more potent than most horror.
Yeah.
All right. What's your number four?
My number four is another slasher. Earlier, you had it Halloween 2018.
Woo!
It is a perfect return to form for that series. It brings and elevates those classic films, which at this point are, look, we have reviewed all the. Did we do all the Halloweens? I don't think we did all the.
Oh yeah, we did all the Halloween.
So we've done all the big series.
We did that. I think we. No, we did that
first one. We did.
No, we did. Fuck, I can't remember.
Which Friday 13th first.
I can't remember now.
Anyway, like from that.
No, we did Halloween. We did Halloween second because we did it the year Halloween came out in 2018. Yes.
Okay, so 2 years ago we did it. This is how terrible existence has been. Can't remember the discussions we did. But yeah, like those films from the 80s, 70s and 80s that we loved, they've kind of become a joke a little bit. Like the quality certainly has faded over time, and like there've been some good ones like in there. Like I think we both enjoyed the remake of or the reboot of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, a lot.
But in the most part, like those films, as they progressed, they got worse and more jokey, and they got away from what made those early entries so horrific and terrifying, and Halloween 2018 goes back to it, and in doing so they also modernize it to make it feel right for today. Maybe it's not going to be the timeless classic that, you know, the original Halloween is, but it feels like the right one for, you know, the middle 2010s. So
yeah, I mean, you know my thoughts on this one. I'll add one random thing about it is I just got a sound bar for Christmas, and so I threw in my 4K of Halloween and watched like the last 20 minutes. God damn, dude. That fucking score from John Carpenter sounds fucking amazing coming out of that thing. Everything I watch now, like if the sound design, like I don't think I ever used to really notice good sound design before because I was just using my TV speakers.
Right, so you never got to experience it.
The two things that have impressed me the most so far have been that and actually the score for The Outsider, like that creepy like score on that show, and like there's just a super loud bass coming from it. Oh my god, dude. But keeping with the Halloween theme a little bit, my number four is It Follows from 2015.
Nice.
Which was the first film from writer-director David Robert Mitchell. And it's kind of like a tribute to Halloween. It has its own original idea, which made it feel fresh, which is basically there's a sexually transmitted demon that, you know, you have to like pass on to somebody. Otherwise, it's going to come back and kill you. But if you have sex with somebody else, then the demon starts chasing them. And so people just like keep passing it along. It's like a super simple like concept, but also kind of like fantasy high concept, like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know?
Yeah.
But also like a lot of the shots and just the look of it, like that suburban like look, is, you know, there's shots that very much feel like Halloween.
Yeah, there's a Halloween vibe to the setting.
And then to the shape behind it. I love I can't remember the actress's name. She should be in more stuff. I really enjoyed her, like the main character in this. And the score from the Disaster Piece. Holy shit, dude. Like that's one of the most iconic scores of the decade. Fucking awesome synth fucking score. I know this is like a movie that like some people like really just are like, fuck that movie, it's overrated. But I'm fully in the camp that it was just like, this thing's fucking classic. Like right away, I was just like, instantly, like I was singing this praises of this movie on the show, and like, you know, my appreciation has like not gone down since, and people that hate on it have not discouraged me at all. I love it wholeheartedly. So, all right, we're getting down to it though here.
Yep.
Top fucking three, dude. What's your number three?
My number three is from directed by a local guy here, Dan Trachtenberg.
I thought this might be on your list.
10 Cloverfield Lane, which is this. It, you could take it two ways, right? Like, cause, so, like, you could, you know, outside of the aliens that show up at the end of it, it is a terrifying, like, what the fuck has happened? Have I been kidnapped by this guy? And I'm locked away with, like, this one other dude, and like you're in this bunker and you don't know what's going on outside, and so you're left thinking like, what the fuck is happening? Where, and John Goodman is he seems like a nice guy but also kind of terrifying, and as things progress, as the days and months and maybe even years go by while they're in this bunker, things start shifting, and it's a terrifying film. And it's all done in a very small space, and it's done primarily with just the three main characters, the three actors. And great performances by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, by John Goodman. It's just so good. It's just that they tied it into this weird Cloverfield thing in a way, but it doesn't need to be that. Like, it works on its own as this terrifying kind of experience.
Yeah, it's a great, like, three people in a room type movie. It feels like something it could be like A24 would put out, where it's just like they figure out how can we use like this really small space and small budget to like big effect, and then it like, you know, opens up at the end. I dig the ending. Like,
yeah, it's cool.
I've not rewatched 10 Cloverfield Lane since the theaters. I really liked it, just like you, but I always felt like I'm like, I just noticed you really loved that movie. So it does not surprise me it's on the list, but I don't have anything bad to say about it at all. Like,
the one bad thing I'll say about it is, like, you know, what the fuck happened to Dan Trachtenberg after that film? Like, He hasn't done a film since then. He did an episode of Black Mirror that year, and he directed an episode of The Boys last year.
It's weird because that film was such a big success. Yeah,
he hasn't directed a film, and he did it under producer J.J. Abrams. Like, you would think, like, you know, having that connection, that he'd be able to do something. And he was attached to that Uncharted film for, you know, about 8 months. But that has had like 42 directors since it was announced in 2011. So it's a shame, but yeah, it's an excellent film.
Also, Goodman, like, so good. You know, it's so against type for him, kind of.
It's great. Yeah, because you expect John Goodman to be the nice, happy dude, like the one you want to hang out with. And for a good portion of this, he kind of is. Except lurking underneath is this craziness, but also not craziness, because he was right about everything.
Yeah, true. He was right, but also
he's crazy.
He was a little like fucking like touched.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I fucking love Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She's so cute, and she should be way more shit than she is. But at least she's kind of like had a decent run in, like, well, she's been in horror movies for a lot of her career. It almost makes me want to go back and watch that Thing sequel, prequel type DVD that they did.
Yeah.
Well, it's maybe something to keep in mind for the future. But my number three, Chris, is, you're not going to be surprised by this, but it's Mandy from 2018.
Okay.
Not I feel like, at all. Yeah, I feel like I've bored the hell out of you especially, you know, anyone that will listen to me about how awesome Mandy is. It's like a movie that, like, when we first watched it for review, I was high enough on it that I'm like, there's something special here. It wasn't what I expected, but, you know, it's something kind of great here. And you were just kind of like, it wasn't what I expected, and it was okay, you know?
Yep.
And it was weird. Like, it's weird. Like, it's just weird. Like, it's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie, yes.
Yeah, but as time has gone on, and as I've watched it almost more, like, I think there's two films this decade that I've rewatched more than any other, and they're both fairly recent, and it's Mandy and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And as I've rewatched Mandy more and more, like, every time I watch it, I love it more. Like, to the point now where I'm just like, this thing is one of the fucking best of the decade. In fact, like, I very highly, like, very strongly considered moving it to my number one. That's how much I love it. It's not a scary movie.
Right.
Really? Like,
it's horrific.
There's things that are super horrific in it, and there's, you know, I think, you know, there is gore, there is violence, but it's like, it's more just, like, this weird bad acid trip vibe of the whole thing that I think is, like, the strongest element of it, and just, like, this fucking awesome score from, I can't remember the composer's name, but, like, this, he's done other stuff, too, like, really big movies, and he, like, somehow Panos Cosmatos, like, landed this big-time composer to do a score. But the composer did, like, a really different job here. It's kind of, like, guitar-based, but also just, like, these really beautiful, like, the main theme is, like, just really beautiful. I don't know, man. Like, I'm going to cut myself off here, because if you let me, I'll just start going on tangents about different things I love about it, like, the love between the two main characters, how you get to really, like, you know, connect with them before the horrible shit happens. It's the, again, I'm already, like, I'm gonna cut myself off. Mandy is fucking great. Chris, you gotta give it another shot. I will force you one day if I have to.
We'll watch it again.
Yeah. So that is my number three. What is your number two?
My number two is, this is kind of going to come out of left field, but it is 2013, I guess 2014 is when I saw it, The Sacrament by Ty West. Which is this crazy found footage cult film.
It's about MAGA.
Yeah, basically. they've gone down to, like, Costa Rica or something, set up on like a private island on a private compound, and it's fucking crazy, like, to see the descent of these people and how into the cult they are. It's disturbing on so many levels. You know, they sit there and believe that they are, you know, that they're following this Christian path or whatever, and it is some twisted, fucked up shit. And it's disturbing. It's stuck with me. I enjoy found footage films, and this one really stuck out to me. I think I had it as, like, number two or three for that year on my list, and so as we're putting this together, I was like, yeah, like, this is a really fucking good movie.
Yeah, the main reason it really surprises me is that, like, yeah, it's just not one I feel like I've seen you talk about a bunch or heard you talk about a bunch either. And it's actually a movie that kind of deserves a little more, like, buzz around it. Like, there's people that, like, will definitely say it's good, and I'm saying it's good too, but it just doesn't seem like it has, like, that buzz around it. But, like, even compared to Ty West's first film, The House of the Devil, people still talk about The House of the Devil.
Yeah, it's like, I've seen that. It's just like,
I appreciate so much what that going is. On.
Yeah, it's going for that, you know, late 60s, early 70s kind of vibe.
And does a very good job of feeling like it actually came out then, you know?
Yeah, like the film grain and everything going on there. It's a pretty movie, but I think The Sacrament has something like it's going for something way different, and it really accomplishes it. And so much of that found footage, that the found footage genre is, oh, we're gonna play with camera tricks and stuff. And this is
Camera falls over at the end.
Yeah,
like this one has got a hell of a climax.
Yeah, like, it's also this is something like similar to earlier with the other one you had on your list where it was more realistic. This is something that could happen. Like, it's not really a fucking like no space aliens are coming down and then taking this shit over. This is a fucking cult that and everything goes wrong.
And this stuff happens.
Yeah,
like it's happened it does. Several times in history.
Yeah, so it's like, and the fact that, and it's still happening. There are still cults today going on. Like, this is something that we could wake up tomorrow and find out that, like, a compound of like 300 or 400 people somewhere that were following somebody they thought was the Messiah have all killed themselves.
Oh, it'd be so awesome if MAGA did that.
Just wake up, be like a.
They're gone.
Yeah.
They caught their spaceships in the fucking. What was like, the name of that cult? Do you remember the name of that cult that wore the Nikes and they thought they were going to go to the fucking.
No.
Oh, it's like on the tip of my tongue. Anyways, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, though, right? Yes. But yeah, so The Sacrament, number two. What do you got at number two, Jeff?
My number two is Jeremy Saulnier's 2016 punk Nazi survival horror film, Green Room. Though again, not a real big surprise, but just a great little. This is an A24 movie. People trapped in the room, and you know, it's like these people. They play a punk show. Like this band plays a punk show, and it's Nazis. It's like a Nazi club. They witness a murder, and then the Nazis want to kill them because they're witnesses, and like so they're like trapped in this green room. They're trying to get out alive. You have Patrick Stewart as like the fucking leader of this Nazi group. You have Anton Yelchin, RIP. Fucking the dude was a very promising young actor.
Yeah.
In one of his last roles, and he's awesome in it. And kind of this awesome punk spirit to the film. And great. Amazing practical violence and gore. Like, it's a movie that some people will watch and say it's not horror, but if you look it up, like you Google it, it's listed as horror, and it's due to this like just brutal grisly violence in it. And it's a lean mean film. I think it clocks in under 90 minutes. There's a sense of danger to the film. Like, anybody could die at any point, and sometimes, like, really big people, like, the people you expect to live and make it are the ones that die, and the people you think would be the ones that get killed end up living. It's awesome. It's a movie, too, that, despite its violence, like, anyone I've recommended it to that has watched it, even, like, non-horror fans, have really dug it, which is surprising to me. But yeah, it's always been a favorite of mine. It was my favorite movie of the year, period, in 2016, and it's always hung around the top of my horror list of the decade.
All right.
You ready for this?
I am.
What's your horror film of the decade?
My horror film of the decade is You're Next, Adam Wingard's.
fucking blow my mind with some of these. All right.
Home Invasion, twist Home Invasion. It's kind of like a black comedy as well. Where it's just, it plays out kind of like a regular Home Invasion, except the twist is that the main character, Erin, she is capable of fucking shit up, and she fights back, and there's twists every single turn. The kills are violent. They're crazy. It's another film with a cult in it. Kind of like it's this family is dealing with this. They're trying to get this money. Like the guy is trying to get, he's trying to kill his family, right? Like, and he set all this shit up. So he set it up so that this tragedy happens at his house so that he can get the inheritance. And instead this woman fucks shit up and, it fucks up his life and everything else. And, it's fun. It's funny. It's violent. It's a blast of a movie.
It's so funny. It's a movie that like I didn't watch right away when it came out, and like I don't remember it having a ton of buzz. It definitely has picked up like a following since.
Yeah, people have latched onto it since then, but sadly, it did not do as. I mean, it was super low budget. Made it with like a million bucks or something like that, but
doesn't feel it though because of like how good the filmmaking is.
Looks good. It's an excellent looking movie. The acting is super solid. The kills and the everything else works really well in it. And you know, it only made like, you know, $20 million or something, which, you know, off a $1 million budget, that's excellent. But it's a shame because I think if people were to give it a shot, they would really, really come away liking it.
I did when I finally did. Like, I just randomly took it. You know, okay, like horror movies. So I finally got around to it. And when I did, I was like, how come nobody told me about this? I hate, like, there's like these times where I'm like, do people not know who I am? I would love this. And so when I saw it, I was very much in love with it. At some point it was in my top 10, it got knocked off. So it would have been, you know, it'd probably be in my top 15. Like, I think I had it slotted in at number 8 and the Snowtown Murders took it out. But I really love that movie. I wish Adam Wingard would like get his mojo back. I don't know. Like, he did that. It was amazing. He followed it up with The Guest, which I watched like fucking 6 times in a row right after it came out. And then he did The Blair Witch, and it's been like nothing since. And The Blair Witch was bad.
I didn't see Death Note. He did that. Netflix,
that was bad.
Movie. He's evidently doing Godzilla versus Kong.
Are you serious? Yeah, that just got delayed too.
Yeah, so he's the director on that.
Does not fit to me, but
no,
again, not at all. Go back to like Your Next type shit or The Guests, like fucking you should be doing stuff, you know, like that. I don't know, but yeah, just a surprising pick to me. It was just a surprising pick. Like, it caught me off guard that was your number one. My number one, again, like I feel like my top picks are not like surprising in any way, but my number one is The Babadook from 2014, and it's weird that I would place it above Green Room and Mandy, which I've watched those both like minimum of 6 times each, and I've seen The Babadook once. And I think the reason for that is The Babadook is the only horror film I've seen in the last decade that actually scared me. Like, it like kind of hurt my soul watching The Babadook. You know, it's like this mom, single mom, because her husband died in a horrible car accident, raising her kid alone. And the kid starts to see this character that he read in a book called the Babadook. And, you know, Babadook keeps showing up and kind of fucking with the kid. And, the mom, because like she's raising him alone and she's under so much stress, and because her kid is such a kind of a nuisance, like such a troubled kid, she starts to lose it, you know, and she starts to see the Babadook too. And it gets to this point where near the climax, the real threat isn't the Babadook anymore. It's her.
Yeah.
Because she wants to kill her kid. And much like the same way as The Shining, where it's like, look, man, I'm not a parent. I don't have kids and whatever. But it's like, I get that feeling. Like, I understand wanting to kill the thing you love the most. Like, and you know, like just being put into such a situation where that like really gets drawn out. And like, there's a point where she like, I remember watching it for my first and only time where I'm like, oh my God, she's going to kill her son. And you know, it's a film about grief too, like very adult themes. Like the Babadook himself is like really scary to me. It's like a weird looking thing in a top hat, but it's just the idea of people, you know, it's one of those horror films about adult drama, like an adult situation, and you add that horror element to it. And just something about that, like the craziness of like the mom, this mom and her son, like kind of alone with each other, dealing with each other and kind of losing it. I don't know, man. Like, again, I haven't revisited it. I'm due for it. There's another one that was like on Netflix forever, but I think it's gone now. But I do really need to rewatch it again. But again, it was like, it was so intense and actually scary the first time I saw it that I was like kind of good on it. But it stuck with me. It's such a powerful, potent like horror drama that I was like, you know, this has to be near top. And it had to be the top. Like, it's not easy to scare a horror veteran. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that
does it, Jeff.
That'll do it. You know, it's been a pleasure and an honor doing this with you for the last 10 years. You know, it's always been a dream of mine to do a show where we talk about movies, and we got to do that. And I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say, except this is it. We reached the end of the road.
Well, it's it for this. Keep the feed in your podcast apps. Something will pop up there at some point.
And yeah. We'll
direct you to what's next. We're, Jeff and I are still going to be talking about just in a different fashion.
Yeah, so stay subscribed and... You know, any kind of special announcements. We might do some special episodes. The last regular weekly episode of Movie Dudes.
Yep.
I don't know what else to say. If you've listened over the years, let me know. It'd be nice to know. And thank you a lot for listening. And pour one out for Movie Dudes.
See you later.
Movie Dudes. Do 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 do.